Good morning, my friends, and welcome to this special presentation of Cowboy State Politics. From very high above, all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly and permanently ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the depths of the middle swamp in Wyoming's capital of Cheyenne. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Friday. It never fails, my friends. The day I'm planning to get out of this swampy place, it snows. A lot. It really is like a scene from a movie. You try to get out, and you get sucked back in. That's okay, though. We'll chalk it up to a divine intervention. It's spring in Wyoming, or at least spring-ish. And here in the Cowboy State, we do have all four seasons, sometimes in the same week. On this morning's broadcast, Representative Harriet Hageman is going to join us to give her response to Joe Biden's State of the Union address. It's worth pointing out that the first State of the Union address was delivered by George Washington on January 8th of 1790 and would have taken him no more than 10 minutes at the maximum for him to deliver. There was no attacking of his political opponents, of which he had many, though no one at the time would be so brazen to attack General George Washington publicly. Though it was a carefully crafted political statement to be sure, it bears no resemblance to the State of the Union addresses that we have become accustomed to. And really, the Constitution doesn't say anything about the president having to deliver a speech to a joint session of Congress. Article 2, Section 3, Clause 1 of the Constitution says that the president shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. That's it. There's nothing else. And some presidents didn't even deliver a speech. Thomas Jefferson changed that in 1801 when he just wrote a letter to be delivered to both the House and the Senate and then read to them by the clerk. It wasn't until 1913, over 100 years later, that President Woodrow Wilson decided to deliver a speech to a joint session of Congress. Coming from Woodrow Wilson, you can only imagine what that thing sounded like. What was once a stately address to members of Congress has become, at least in Joe Biden's America, a nakedly political tirade, devoid of any presidential dignity. I've posted a link to George Washington's first inaugural address at cowboystatepolitics.com. You should go read it. Like I said, it's not going to take you very long. This morning, I had a chance to visit with Representative Harriet Hageman and get her thoughts on the president's State of the Union address. Here it is. One day after President Joe Biden's State of the Union address, Harriet Hageman joins me on the program. Good morning, Harriet.
Good morning, David.
How are things in Washington,
well,
D.C.?
Well, nice. I am actually just walking to my office from the Rayburn office building. We just had a meeting with the Judiciary Committee and with Jordan Peterson, which I know that you want to visit a bit about, but things are good here.
So what did you think of the president's so-called State of the Union?
Well, first of all, I didn't attend it. I've watched parts of it. I knew what he was going to do, and he did what I suspected he was going to do, which is yelled at us, lied through his teeth, used MAGA extremists, and basically gaslit the American public into believing something that isn't true.
There were so many things in that speech that were just blatantly false. I mean, one of the ones that really stuck out to me is, I've cut $1 trillion from the deficit.
It makes absolutely no sense. We are in the budget process right now. And keep in mind, we're not even using his budget because it's such an outrage. And it doesn't, and we're not cutting $1 trillion. We should.
We absolutely should. But there's no way that Joe Biden.
He's never cut anything.
Well, he's done a lot of adding, yeah. but there's not been any cutting.
Yeah, he hasn't cut anything. So I don't even know what he's talking about. What I kind of feel like with that is that it's just something that's written down and he reads it, but he has no idea what he's even saying.
Well, it's very clear. I mean, obviously, presidents don't write their own speeches anymore. Right. But it's pretty clear that he just reads whatever is put in front
yes.
of him.
I think that that's absolutely fair. Well, I think that when you look at him, and if you were to compare what he is like, what he was like last night with even a year ago, you can see there's been substantial decline. So it's in part reading what is in front of him, but Joe Biden does not know what is happening in this country. There has not been an opportunity for him to cut $1 trillion from our deficit. He's never engaged with the House or the Senate or the process where money is being cut from the budget. So I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that he doesn't know what he's talking about either. Another thing that struck me is his comments on the border. Send me a bill.
We did. We sent him the very strongest border security bill that has ever come out of Congress. What the Senate cobbled together and what he's trying to shove and force the House to adopt isn't a border security bill. There isn't anything about border security in it. The only funding that he is seeking is not for building a wall and doing what would actually result in actual border security. What he's seeking is he's seeking funding so he can more quickly process illegals. That's what he's seeking.
Yes.
In addition to which, it allows for between 5,000, it would allow for between 5,000 and 8,500 illegals coming into our country every single day. And if he declared an emergency, that number could actually be increased, not decreased, but he could declare an emergency to increase that number if he felt it was necessary. And those limits expire in 2025. It's not
yes.
a border security bill. It's not about putting together or adopting the or developing the policies or the mechanisms that would actually secure our border and stop illegal immigration. It is a bill designed to expedite illegal immigration.
Well, that's exactly what they're trying to do. And if Joe Biden wanted to do anything about the border, all he'd have to do is rescind the executive orders that he signed in the first days of his presidency.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And I'd go a step further. All he has to do is enforce the law as written. The law very clearly is that parole may only be used on a case-by-case basis. What does that mean? Let's say that there's a family that comes across the border and the six-year-old child needs to be taken to the hospital. His parents can temporarily be paroled into the United States so that they can go with him to the hospital. That's what the law says. So when he has been mass paroling millions of people, not on a case-by-case basis, not on the basis of John Smith and Jose Jones and all of those, he's not taking those and saying, okay, each of you are individually paroled into the United States. He's saying, well, we're going to parole everybody from Venezuela, and we're going to parole everybody from Nicaragua, and we're going to parole everybody from who happens to be wearing red shirts today. It isn't a case-by-case basis. So, yes, you're exactly right on the executive orders, but the reason that we are impeaching, the reason we impeached Mayorkas is because Mayorkas is not just ignoring the law, he is blatantly violating it. I don't know how you can find something that is more of a high crime and misdemeanor than to look at the law and say nothing that law says will be implemented under my watch. And that's what he has done, and that's the same thing with Joe Biden. So we also have the Section 235 issues, which state that if you are seeking asylum, you shall be held in custody or in your country of origin until your case is resolved. So when these people are coming in and saying, oh, I've got credible fear that something's going to happen to me in my country, then the response is, okay, then you either can go back to your country and wait, or we're going to put you in jail until your case is resolved. I mean, that's what the law says. They're not doing that. They're just releasing them into the interior of the country. So, again, it's a matter of executive orders, but even worse than that, they're just ignoring the statutory laws that already exist.
It's absolutely lawless. Ooh. And I don't think that there's no other way to describe it. And I mean, we've seen evidence even in Wyoming of illegal immigrants popping up in various places. So if you have illegal immigration that's happening in the interior of the country, you're either completely ignoring what the situation is or you're facilitating it.
They are facilitating it. They're facilitating it by the money that they're giving to these families. They're facilitating it by their efforts to provide them with shelter and clothing and food. But here is, I think, what the real culprit is, and people have got to recognize this as well, and we're going to have to fix this. It's the NGOs that are getting wealthy off of this. We're paying Catholic Charities and a variety of other organizations literally tens of millions of dollars. Those caravans that are coming from South and Central America, do you know who is funding those?
I would say there's a likelihood we are.
It's the United States government. We're sending the money to the NGOs that are actually the ones that are doing those. So when I say that it's the federal government, I mean not indirectly, absolutely directly. We are the ones that are sending the money to the people who are bringing in, who are forming, creating, developing, working with their communities down there to create these caravans. We're the ones that are paying them to get here. So again, I'm going to go back to Mayorkas. I don't know what is a more what you could describe as an impeachable offense than to have the person who is responsible for the security of the United States funding an invasion of our country and our states. So again, we're the ones that are funding that, and we're doing it through these NGOs. We have to stop the NGOs. We have to stop getting that money to them.
It's absolutely amazing. I want to ask you about a couple of things that you sent out in your newsletter, and I highly suggest that everybody sign up for it. In fact, I'll put a link to it at the website. But in the newsletter, you said, quote, under President Joe Biden, the world is in chaos and America is weaker than at any point in my lifetime, with wars being waged in multiple theaters and an invasion of over 10 million illegals at our southern border, and communist China spying on us daily. Now, that's pretty clear, but I was wondering if you could just expound on that for a minute.
I think that what happened in Afghanistan showed to the rest of the world how incredibly weak and incompetent the Biden administration is. And so when the rest of the world looked at that, they thought, wow, we've got somebody that incompetent in the White House and they're willing to do what they just did to a country that they've literally spent trillions of dollars attempting to liberate from the Taliban rule, from radical Islamic ideology. And this is what they did. And at that point, I think that the world recognized that America was no longer the superpower that we have historically been. And so it was not long after that, what, 6-7 months, that Putin invaded Ukraine. You've got a situation with China that has been absolutely relentless throughout the world in terms of overfishing and illegal fishing throughout the world, because the United States isn't doing anything to stop that. You've got the situation with Gaza and what happened on October 7th. You've got just this mass migration out of countries all over the world into the United States of America. One of the things that everybody understands is so many of these people, these aren't family units, these are military age men. And I've had many people say that they're worried about another 9/11. And I'm not as worried about a 9/11 simply because of how logistically difficult that is to be able to carry that out. What I'm worried about is another October 7th. And so I just think that what Biden has done since he's been in office has been a failure by every single metric. And I think that it has weakened us on the world stage. And I have always stated that a weak United States makes for a very dangerous world.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there are so many things that are happening in our world that can be traced right back to Joe Biden, many of which he talked about last night. You mentioned the October 7th and what's going on in Israel. He blatantly said that we have to have a two-state solution, which you and I know that pretty much means the end of Israel.
A two-state solution isn't happening. It's not happening.
I mean, there's no way that they can do that.
Why would we reward a Hamas by giving them a country that they're not entitled to. This is historical Israel. They're absolutely entitled to that area. And there isn't going to be a two-state solution. There can't be a two-state solution because Hamas has already clearly indicated that they will not honor Israel's right to exist. With what Israel did, starting in the early 2000s, in essentially turning Gaza over to the Palestinians, was a two-state solution. They said, govern yourselves. How about it? We're going to even leave all of the businesses there. All of the infrastructure is there. All of the water infrastructure is there. All of the greenhouses, the multi-million dollar greenhouses, we're going to leave everything there for you. You can walk in, unlock the door, and start selling fruit and vegetables throughout the world. And we're turning the entire thing over to you. Go and govern yourself. And for the last 20 years, it has been chaos, it has been murder and mayhem, and it resulted in October 7th. So who in their right mind would say, oh, well, then I think if we have a two-state solution, this will work. They had one. And the result of it was what Hamas did on October 7th.
Absolutely. And anybody, in my opinion, anybody who says that we need a two-state solution, really what they mean is they don't want Israel to exist anymore.
That's exactly right.
I'm just very interesting, Harriet. Just yesterday on the steps of our Capitol, there was a pro-Israel rally. And it was amazing to me how many protesters there were. I mean, it's Wyoming, so it's not protests the size that you see in other big cities. But for Cheyenne, Wyoming, It was pretty significant, and I don't think that people really understand, one, what Joe Biden is advocating for, what he advocated for last night, and I don't think that they understand what a lot of other countries are suggesting when they say we have to have a two-state solution and when they say we have to have an immediate ceasefire like Joe Biden did last night.
You know, it's also so strange, and it's why I'm constantly trying to figure out what the ultimate agenda is. So since the war in Ukraine started, since Putin invaded, there have been a couple of jumping off points where even the Ukraine said we need to have a ceasefire. We need to have a ceasefire so that we can talk about the future of what's going to happen here. Who do you think was the first country that came out and said absolutely no to a ceasefire in Ukraine between Ukraine and Russia? The United States of America. It was Joe Biden came out and said, no, absolutely will not tolerate a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia. It was about the first 6 months of the war, and the Ukraine government, Zelensky came out, and I don't know if it was Zelensky, but it was their government, and said, we need to talk about a ceasefire. And Joe Biden and his administration, I don't know who it was in the State Department, came out and said, absolutely no ceasefire under any circumstance. Then about 3 months ago, there was another comment made. We need to talk about a ceasefire. We need to figure out how we're ultimately going to resolve this dispute in between Ukraine and Russia. And again, our State Department was the first one out there saying, absolutely no, there will not be a ceasefire in Ukraine. There will not be a ceasefire in Ukraine. So we're the ones that are encouraging the continued slaughter of what's happening in Ukraine. Joe Biden wants to criticize people like me who are unwilling to send another $60 billion of unaccountable funds over to Ukraine to fund that war, but they won't even talk about a solution that is reasonable and rational. They won't even allow Ukraine to talk about a ceasefire. Yet within days after October 7th, they were already starting to grumble about a ceasefire. And since then, they have come out and repeatedly stated there needed to be a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Now, why the different treatment? Why are they taking a different approach?
Well, it's because there's a lot of reasons in my mind. First of all, with Ukraine, I think that they want endless war so that they can, I mean, the end goal, I'm not exactly sure, but they clearly want endless war. And with the Israel situation, I think that you have radicals in the administration that fundamentally don't believe that Israel has a right to exist.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. I think you're correct. But it is so interesting to watch as these two international disasters play out which side the Biden administration takes. And I think that it's clear and everybody knows Joe Biden has been wrong on every national and international policy issue for the last 50 plus years. And he really has been he has been unwavering in his wrongness on all of these issues. And this is just another example of that.
Well, I think that Joe Biden has been fundamentally wrong on just about every issue, whether it's a foreign policy decision or it's an economic decision. I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, after all, Harriet, Joe Biden was the guy that said we shouldn't kill Osama bin Laden.
This is an example of why elevating someone who's been in the Senate as long as Joe Biden demonstrates what a disaster it will be. Because being in Congress and being in either the House or the Senate, you're never fully responsible for any decision that is made. And Joe Biden was a backbencher from the beginning. Joe Biden is not a bright man. He's been a backbencher forever, but he was able to amass power and stay in power. And the world and the United States are suffering the consequences of that.
I couldn't agree with you more. So I've taken up quite a bit of your time, but I've got to hear about your conversation with Jordan Peterson.
So yesterday we had a hearing on the Weaponization Committee, the Select Committee on Weaponization of the Federal Government. And what we're really focusing on is that federal government is gaining access to our banking records, to citizens' banking records, to determine what it is that they're purchasing. And obviously they're focusing on things like guns. But what they're also doing is they're creating profiles. So they're looking at spending habits. They're accessing banking records of citizens of the United States in violation of the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. And they're doing it in conjunction with the banks giving them that information. And we're trying to find a way to block them from being able to access this information. So we had a panel that we brought in yesterday, and Dr. Jordan Peterson from Canada was one of the witnesses. Now, what was interesting for bringing Kim in is, and I think what his incredible, why he was so important to have there, is he's able to bring the perspective of, I live in a country that does not have a First Amendment. I live in a country that does not have a Fourth or a Fifth Amendment. And I can tell you that the government eventually takes over all aspects of your lives, even if they claim to be a liberal democracy or a whatever they want to say, that it is absolutely imperative that we use every tool that we have to ensure that our constitutional rights are protected from this government and subsequent administrations. And so that was the purpose of the hearing yesterday. I focused on the fact that we now know that the IRS and DOJ are using AI to search banking records. And that was uncovered a couple of weeks ago by one of the journalists, and James O'Keefe. And so we know that they're now using AI, which allows them basically to do this at the speed of sound. And there's no accountability for it. So we need to figure out how we're going to block the government from being able to use these tools that they have because of our computer technology, how we can block them from using these technologies to violate our civil rights. But this morning we had a small group meeting with Jordan Peterson and other people that he works with, really just addressing more of a philosophical view of how do we protect against what is happening in real time with the increase with TikTok, with the creation of ever more sophisticated AI and those sorts of things. So it was just a very interesting roundtable with people like Thomas Massie, who's brilliant, Chip Roy, who's brilliant, Chairman Jordan, who's brilliant. It was just at Daryl Issa. It was just really a fascinating discussion.
I bet it was. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that meeting. And interestingly enough, the Wyoming legislature just passed a bill that, I mean, I don't think it's a good bill, but it tried to address the tracking of gun purchases by credit card companies. I don't know if Governor Gordon will sign it or not, but what interested me about what you just said was now they're using AI to monitor transactions and to search bank records. So even if state legislatures or the federal government act quickly and say, well, we're not going to allow you to track gun purchases, you're already behind the game. I mean, they're already ahead of you.
That was one of the things that we discussed today. That's exactly right. We're chasing the tail. We're trying to figure out how to address, the horse is out of the barn in many ways on these, so how do we develop the legislation that is needed to address them when we've got, they're already using it. And one of the things that I have found from the Select Committee on the weaponization is that our government has absolutely no qualms whatsoever about using this technology to violate our civil rights on a daily basis. And if you catch them, their response is, oh yeah, probably shouldn't have done that. Or what are you going to do about it? We have, what are you going to do about it? And I have often said in observing what's happened over the last 3 years, when you look throughout history, anarchy typically comes from the bottom, right? The French Revolution, anarchy comes from the bottom. It doesn't come from the top. You're trying to depose the top. You're trying to change the government. We're living in an anarchic situation right now, but it's coming from the top. We have people in positions of power who absolutely, I won't say that they don't believe the law applies to them. They don't care whether it does or not. It doesn't matter to them whether the law applies to them.
I agree with you, Harriet. And, you know, I broke a story just a month ago about that very thing happening in the Wyoming legislature. And the recourse for it is there is none. That the people who are violating the law are the same people who are in charge of prosecuting the people who break the law. And so it's completely lawless.
I would agree with that. And that's what you're seeing here in Washington, D.C. And that's why, when we bring these folks, whether it's Mayorkas or whomever it may be, when we bring them before our committees, and they can sit there and say, essentially, they kind of dance around it a little bit so that the press can try to pretend that they're not doing what they're doing. But they'll literally look at you and they'll say, yeah, what are you going to do about it? DOJ's on our side. So you know, they arrested a father last night, a Gold Star father last night, because he yelled at Joe Biden.
Well, they did.
Yes, they did. One of the fathers from from what happened in Afghanistan, one of the 13, he was a guest of Representative Troy Nels there. And he yelled about, remember the Marines, and they arrested him.
What was the charge?
I don't know what the charge is. I don't have any idea. But yet we had the pro-Hamas demonstrators actually blocked his motorcade getting to the Capitol. And none of them were arrested. So it's total lawlessness.
Well, we certainly have to change.
Yes, we do.
And I mean, one of the comments you made in your newsletter was, "I hope this is the last State of the Union that President Biden delivers."
Yes,
because I don't think that we can take another one.
That, and I don't think we can take another 4 years. It is bad enough when they have to actually run for re-election. Can you imagine how lawless he's going to be when he doesn't even have to run again? He's a very dangerous man. This is a very dangerous administration.
Yes, it is, Harriet. Yeah. Well, I've taken up plenty of your time, so I want to give you a chance to tell people where your next town hall is or when you might be back so that they can come and visit with you.
It will be later this month that I will be back in Wyoming. I'm not coming home to Wyoming this weekend just because I only have 2 days and I've got meetings Monday mornings, and it's just a long trip. I was back the last...
Well, it's snowing.
I was back the last couple of weekends. So I will be back in Wyoming closer to the end of the month. And we have done 4 town halls now this year. Great turnouts, great response. People are extremely engaged. And you can probably tell I'm walking. I've got to get over to vote right now. But it's been wonderful to be back in Wyoming and engage with everyone. So I want to thank all of them for their support and their thoughtfulness and their willingness to engage.
Well, thank you very much, Harriet, for what you're doing in Washington, D.C. I know every single person that I talk to is very grateful that you are where you are. So
thanks,
thank you,
David.
For what
we'll
you
talk
do.
To you soon. Bye-bye.
We're lucky to have somebody like Harriet representing us and the state of Wyoming in Washington, D.C. As I mentioned during the interview, I've put a link to Harriet's newsletter at cowboystatepolitics.com. You should really go sign up for it. You'll get more than a couple of updates each and every week. Well, that'll about do it for today's special presentation of Cowboy State Politics. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk again once I'm safely out of the middle swamp and back at the Cowboy State Politics studio. But for now, from the depths of the middle swamp in Wyoming's capital of Cheyenne, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.